November 20, 1938. The soul in waiting for the divine will. The divine will forms the adaptable material for the works of God. The little divine field. I feel the divine will inside and outside of me, surprising me whenever I'm about to do my little actions, or to say my little I love you, to invest them with its light and make them its own. It has such an astonishing, inimitable attention that it's almost incredible. If the creature is not attentive in giving it her little acts, oh, how much it suffers. Oh, how much I too would like to be all attentive, to imitate it by letting nothing escape me, so that we can surprise each other. But as I was thinking this, my sweet Jesus, visiting my little soul, all love told me, my blessed daughter, the soul that wants to live in my will lives in waiting for it. She waits for it when she loves, because she wants to love together with it. If she operates, she awaits my will, because it wants to be actor and audience. My will is in continuous and anxious expectation of everything the creature does, in order to inhabit her, to be the actor, to make her acts its own. Furthermore, you must know that as the creature enters my will, she finds the sanctity of God investing her, its beauty embellishing her, its love transforming her in God. Its purity makes her so limpid that she no longer recognizes herself. Its light makes her godlike. Oh, how the power of my will can change the human destiny. This is why it becomes spectator of the creature, wanting to do its work, that has been prepared from all eternity and that has to be done for that creature. My will does not want to be repressed in its incessant motion, and it reaches the point of locking the creature within its eternal motion, to be able to receive and to give, and not to suffer in waiting for one to live in its will. It cannot bear not having the creature living closely together with it. If it does not feel the creature within its divine motion and sanctity, its love remains as if arrested and suffocated. Therefore, we keep our little divine field within one who lives in our will. Here we can do our job, while our will provides us with the adaptable material to make the most beautiful works. In fact, when we want to work in the little field of the soul, we expect to find the material of our sanctity, since we would never put our holy hands in the human mud. In order to do our most beautiful works, we want to find our purity that attracts us, our beauty that enraptures us, our love that imposes itself on us to make us work. Only our will can provide these divine materials for our job. Everything is adaptable for us, so we can make such works as to astonish heaven and earth. On the other hand, we are forced to do nothing where our will is not present. We do not find our adaptable materials, and if there is any good, it is only an apparent good, stained by self-esteem, self-glorification and distorted intentions. We are averse to working in that creature, because we would put in danger our most beautiful works. We make certain first, and then we operate. You must know that the more acts the creature does in our will, the more she enters into God. The more we extend that little field within our divine womb, the more beautiful the works we can do, and the more we can give of ourselves. Therefore, the creature is always under the increasing action of our divine life. Our love for her is so great that we carry her in our arms, continuously repeating, "We make you in our image and likeness." We nurture her with our divine breath, with our sanctity, power and goodness. We look at her, finding our reflection, our wisdom, our enchanting beauty. How could we ever stay without this creature if we are tied together by our divine attributes, if she possesses us and continuously gives us in return what we gave her, in order to love and repay us? Beyond this, by living in our will she received from us the virtue of producing life, not works. In fact, by giving her our sanctity, love, and everything else, we give her the generative virtue. She continuously generates life of sanctity, life of love, life of light, beauty, power and wisdom, offering it to us. She surrounds us and never stops returning to us, turning into life all that we gave her. Oh, what a conception, what a feast and glory for us, in seeing so many lives return to us, that love and glorify our sanctity, and seeing this done in our light, wisdom and beauty. Other creatures can give us, at the most, works of sanctity and of love, but not of life. Only one who lives in our will can form many lives with her acts, because she has received from us the generative virtue to be able to generate as many lives as she wants, and say, "Life you gave me, life I give back to you." See, then, the great difference: life can speak and is not subject to end. It can generate. Works cannot speak, cannot generate, and they are subject to dispersion. Therefore, nobody can reach the one who lives in our will, and the love she has for us. No matter how many great works they might do, they will always be like little drops of water before an ocean of the little light in front of the sun. One single "I love you" of the creature living in my will is enough to leave behind all the love of all the creatures put together. This "I love you," although small, runs, embraces and rises over all. It comes into our arms and hugs us. It gives us 1,000 caresses, telling us many beautiful things about our love. It takes refuge in our womb, and we hear it always repeating, "I love you, I love you, I love you. Life of my life, you generated me and I will love you forever." In anything these creatures should want to do, they do nothing less than form life. If they perform good and holy acts, by possessing the life of our will, they generate the life of our beauty and the life of our sanctity. Coming into our arms, they tell us the story of our beauty and sanctity, and oh, how many beautiful things they tell us, with how much grace they narrate the extension of our goodness and the height and greatness of our sanctity. They never stop repeating how good and holy we are, and throwing themselves into our divine womb, they penetrate into the most intimate hiding places to get to know, even more, how good and holy we are, so they keep singing to us again and again how good and holy we are. Oh, how beautiful it is to hear the narration of our divine history from a human will united with our own, whispering to her who her creator is. In sum, if she wants to glorify us, she generates the life of our glory. If she admires our power, wisdom and beauty, she feels within herself the life of our divine qualities. She narrates to us how powerful, wise and beautiful we are. She says, "Life of my life, now that I've known you, I feel the need to talk about you and to narrate your divine story." These lives are the greatest glory for us, our long and inseparable generation, always in motion, always speaking about our Supreme Being. No life waits for another. As one comes, another follows behind, and then another again, they never end. Our happiness is full of the purpose of creation fulfilled, which is having the company of the creature who knows us. And while we delight in her and she is with us, we make her more and more like us. How could we not love the company of the one who belongs to us? And, even more, we love the company of the creature, because we are life of her life. This is why our pain was great when Adam, the first one of our sons, descended from within our will, to do his own will. Poor Adam. He lost the generative virtue to generate divine lives with his acts. At the most, he could make works, but not lives. When he was united with our will, he possessed that divine virtue, so he could form with his acts as many lives as he wanted. It happened to him as to the sterile mother who cannot give life, or as to a person who possesses the most pure and bright golden thread and wants to do a work with it, but then throws away that golden thread. He pushes my will as life away from himself. He has to use the thread of his own will, which is like an iron thread. Poor creature. He could no longer do golden works. Works invested by the bright sun of my will. He had to remain doing only works of iron, and if necessary, even works filthy with passions. The destiny of Adam was so reversed that he almost couldn't recognize himself. He went down into the abyss of miseries. The strength and the light were not in his power anymore. Before he sinned, our image and resemblance were growing in all his acts. That was a task we assumed in the act of creating him, and we did want to maintain our task, keeping in force our creative word through his very acts. We wanted also to keep him always together with us, and in continuous communication with us. So, our pain was great, and if we, being all-seeing, had not seen how our will was to reign again as life in the future centuries like a little balm to our intense suffering, we would have reduced the whole of creation to nothing, not knowing what to do with it when our will no longer reigned. Creation was supposed to serve only the creatures, and we created all things for ourselves and for the creatures. Therefore, pray that my will may return as life. You, yourself, be its victim.